Rock Under Fire is coming to you live from the Stick Studios in downtown Calabash.
How the guitar went from the most powerful symbol of rock and roll to an instrument for pussies.
Repeat that.
How the guitar went from the most powerful symbol of rock and roll to an instrument for pussies.
Welcome back to Rock Under Fire. You know, the Roman Empire fell over a long period of time. It took a long time. There's no historian out there that can give you the exact date or the exact year that Rome fell.
Okay? I know where you're going with this.
Yeah. It happened over a long period of time, hundreds of years. You know, if you were alive back then and you were living during the last given 100-year period of the Roman Empire, say 2nd century, 3rd century, in those years where, you know, the barbarians started to come in, 400s, something like that. You know, you weren't...
Absolutely,
you know,
horrifying.
You weren't sitting around saying, you know, well, we fell yesterday. Really? Did it hurt?
Damn,
did you get
right,
banged
it hurt.
Up? Did you put a Band-Aid on it?
You were
we're falling. We are in the process of falling.
You were probably thrown into slavery.
Rome
and
is falling.
Killed.
Yeah, you're going, ah! Yeah. Well, your wife was getting raped and they were hacking your limbs off. Freaking barbarians.
But, you know, if you lived during the arc of a turning point, you probably began to notice that things were different. Things just felt different. There were little turning points that made you say, well, things aren't the same anymore. So, you know, here in the 21st century, while rock may not be completely fucking dead, we know that things have changed in the last 25 years to where
heartbeat.
We could just, like, say that rock is dead as we knew it, as we once knew it, to be the center of the universe.
I think our mission statement for this entire show.
Yeah, it's our mission statement. Anybody wants to dispute that, throw us your comments on Facebook.
Come on, if you're listening on YouTube, come on the air.
Whatever it is, you know. But this morning I was scrolling Facebook and somebody had posted. I seen a couple people post this over, you know, it's one of those posts that just kind of keep coming up. It's like a meme. And it says 1994 was the worst year in music history.
Hell no.
Kurt Cobain died and Justin Bieber was born.
That's a cute meme. That's all that is.
It was probably made before 2016. Right. You can't take it seriously. But it kind of plays into where I'm going later on, where, you know, our topic is the wimpification of the guitar. It's well known that a lot of people attribute the death of Kurt Cobain to the end of the rock era. The death of Kurt Cobain did not kill rock and roll. It just kind of marked
a before the end of something.
After.
You know what?
It marked the before and after. It kind of serves as a marker for the beginning of the end.
You're always making art metaphors.
Right.
I just thought of this, man. Is Kurt Cobain like the Andy Warhol of rock and roll? That's the last really big moment you think of. I know I'm probably ignorant when it comes to fine arts, but something ends
after Andy
Warhol
for me, man.
I don't know where Warhol would play into that.
Well, I see his point. He was like the last relevant artist.
If you take an art class, I think, to this day, they're stopping at Warhol, man. Like, I don't...
There's a guy with a B, his last French dude.
Basquiat.
Basquiat.
Basquiat. Basquiat.
Yeah,
he was cool.
Basquiat. He was cool.
Yeah, Basquiat. Even he looked up to Warhol.
No, I don't think art ends with Andy Warhol. No. There's a lot of
something
good stuff
ended
in the last 35, 40, 50 years since Warhol.
I think rock still survived after Kurt Cobain killed himself.
It was kind of the beginning of the disappearance of rock from the mainstream world and consequently pop culture. That's kind of the
maybe
thing
that's
that
it.
We
Yeah, but I think it already started before then. I got to disagree with that statement because I think it had already started. It had already started.
Even when grunge was at its peak, yeah, and there was still rock songs on the charts, even mixed in with all those R&B and hip-hop songs in the early 90s, man, it was very much a presence, man. Kids were wearing the flannel shirts, man. They were growing the same fucking haircuts as Kurt Cobain. True. They were still playing guitars.
Heavy metal bands were popular, guitars, like Korn and Slipknot. All
kids
that shit was
high
happening.
School
you had the hybrids,
were,
too.
Were,
the Limp Bizkit of the
grunge,
world,
man.
Was, you know... It started already turning. I think it already started turning before Nirvana was done.
Sure.
I got to say this since you said that. You know, I can say, and I can't believe I'm saying this, but perhaps the greatest performance by a fucking frontman I ever saw was Fred Durst, believe it or not. Dude, he kicked my ass, dude.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
He
rocked, dude.
Wow.
He did. I saw him do something that no singer ever did. He got into the crowd at Giant Stadium and was singing up in the upper deck. He was walking down and walking across. Wow. I was like, holy shit, dude.
Woodstock, they put him out on a piece of plywood, and he was crowd surfing on it. They were, like, holding him up, and he was, like, standing on it. I was at Asbury Park Convention Hall. I saw Live there, and he went up into the into the thing and was singing. Andy, or what the hell's his name? I can't remember his first name, but he was a pretty wild lead singer, man.
I actually think they got back together or just released an album or something live. Yeah, they're back, I think. That's another good example. It's another 90s band. Rock was king in the 90s. But
I think
the mood was dark. It was dark music.
Yeah, it was. And it was a dark attitude. Yeah. You know, I think you might have mentioned
much different,
Mike,
than the 80s.
That what was my point? That I can't even remember the point. Jesus Christ. Oh, that was a little brain fart on my part. I can't remember the point. Mike mentioned something in a past episode that was really good. I wanted to bring it up.
But this is episode 19. Welcome to episode 19. Mike DiRico here, Pat Ivanitsky, and Stick Nixon.
Stephen King fans, 19 is a big number.
Podcast.
Yep.
A what?
Stephen King fans out there, 19 is a big number.
Is it?
Yeah, the Dark Tower series, 19 is a big number.
Really?
Yeah.
I lost touch with Stephen King at the... Christine, I think, like the last book I read.
Oh man, you know, if you lost touch there, I got to turn. You got to read the one about Kennedy. The 11 was 1122.
I had that in my hands 50 billion times.
Look at me, brother.
Great book, fantastic
this
book.
Week included.
One of his best books.
Right
ever.
Up to a couple days ago, I had that thing in my hand.
The ending sucked. I don't know. It was okay. It was not his best work.
Stephen King is that like starting book, on Stephen King is like starting on Bob Dylan. Like, where do you start? Do you go to the beginning and go chronologically? Because that's typically what I would do.
I would do. I would tell somebody to do that.
If you were turning someone on for the first time, you'd tell them to go chronologically.
What is the book
you want to hook him with his best stuff? Give him like the masterpiece right off the bat.
Well, then in that pace, you want to go to The Stand. You want to start him off at The Stand and move forward from there.
Yeah.
I think that's clearly his best.
What would be the worst book to start with?
It was a recent one. Revival. It was fucking awful. I had a hard time reading it.
Really?
I can read a King book in 3 to 4 days, a big like a 1500 page novel. Mm-hmm. And this book I had a hard time getting through it. I was like, this is horrible. Horrible. I'm rereading a 7-book series by him right now. I'm on book 6 or 5. I'm rereading it because they're doing a movie about it. So I said, I'm going to go back and read. I bought them all of my
kids. What's
Kindle,
that,
so
man?
The Dark Tower.
Yeah.
That's where 19 is from. That's why it's fresh in my head. But I don't have to hold these big, heavy books in my hands anymore. I got a nice little Kindle, and I can just flip through the pages. Uh-huh. It's great.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to sidetrack us, man. I just said 19.
The whole show is a sidetrack, man. We should just name the show Sidetracked.
Sidetracked.
Yeah, that'll be our next podcast.
You know what? I have a what's going on. A couple of what's going on is actually one is I'm back on the show finally live. I'm not in Louisiana.
Yes.
But I finally got to make my promise to Stick and bring the book about Clapton in for him to read.
Yeah, thanks, bro.
How fitting is that tonight's going to be the pussification of rock and roll guitar.
It's a pretty short book. It's surprisingly small.
It is. It's a quick read. There's a lot in there. You know, the print is small.
I like that.
Keep talking about Clapton. I want to find something.
It's a quick read. It's very interesting. Like I said, there's a lot of stuff you're going to learn about the dude. There's a lot of stuff you probably even know. But I know that I grabbed that one bit about him and Steve Winwood, and neither one of them wanted to sing on that record.
I just want the dirt, man. I want to
know
who's
dirt.
Who's what kind of drugs he's doing.
You know, he briefly talks about when his kid died and stuff like that. It's a good read.
I want to read this and feel like I need to take a shower afterward. I'm so filthy.
That's the early stuff. Yeah. He's definitely, he wasn't a great guy.
I thought I had the Bruce book on deck, but maybe I'll do this one before the Bruce book.
Take your time with it. I read it. It's you know, like I said, interesting read.
I think fitting to our guitar topic tonight, and obviously the two big, the one big news story this week is Chuck Berry. I'll hold that thought for a second because you brought up Clapton. Clapton apparently just played two shows at the Garden. And there's a lot of speculation that they're his last shows in the States ever.
Wow.
Okay. Now, he did some 50th anniversary shows last year. Okay, and in the tour program, he wrote, quote, unquote, "I swear this is it."
Holy shit.
"No more. I know I've been threatening retirement for the last 50 years, but I didn't think I'd ever really want to stop.
That's...
I love what I do and always have done, but over the last few decades, I've found what I was always really looking for."
What's that?
"A loving family who love me just the way I am, which means I can relax and rest when I need to, and more, I treasure the beauty of that." The letter went on to say, "Hopefully I might be able to remember and breathe some life into this old stuff. In truth, believe me, with these great guys to play with, I'll be having the time of my life." This was a year or two ago. When he was doing some 50th anniversary shows.
Oh, that's when that was?
That quote's a year or two old?
Okay, so he still played these two recent shows at the
Garden. Now, I don't know whatever the speculation regarding health issues with Clapton lately. I haven't really looked into that. But he only announced four shows for 2017. Nothing like, there was two in L.A. and two in the Garden. And the two that were just played at the Garden. So, I mean, basically, there's a lot of speculation around these shows that this might be it for Clapton.
Wow. The Doyle,
for somebody to like print that in his tour book, his program.
Doyle Bromwell play with him at the Garden, you know?
I don't know.
Wow.
But, yeah, I was thinking he had some physical ailment like carpal tunnel or something that stopped him, but
maybe he's just seen some of his legends leave, and he goes, "I don't want to go out like that, still playing." I don't know, man.
That's a convincing quote. But if that quote's 2 years old, I don't know.
And then he shows up and plays four shows in the States.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He talks about it in there. He's really a recluse, I guess. He's really like,
yeah.
He's not a very outward guy at all. He never wanted to be, you know, that whole Clapton is God thing kind of really got under his skin a little bit.
Where does he live now? Do you know?
I don't.
Were we going to get into something else? Like what
I had another what's going on. Okay. Riley for Christmas and birthday, because they're a couple of days apart. Her grandparents got her tickets for Panic at the Disco at the Garden, and we went. I guess it was the beginning. Yeah, I haven't seen you guys. It was the beginning of the month.
You panic exclamation point.
Yeah,
at the Disco.
I gotta say, I was impressed. I was impressed. Mm-hmm. The kid is good, and it's his band. You know, I asked Riley a little bit about the history of it. It's his band. So
they've been around.
Yeah, they have been. 13 years. He's been doing it.
Feels like longer than that. Yeah.
So he goes in the middle of the show. He goes, you know, it's my first time playing Madison Square Garden. He sells the place out, first of all. He goes, "I feel like I have to address the elephant in the room." Sits down behind his piano and plays Moving Out with the band. The entire song from beginning to end.
Oh, really?
Billy Joel. And
no kidding.
Kills it.
No kidding.
I had my Billy Joel shirt on.
Nice.
And he was playing there the next night. And you know, I had my one from the Garden on.
Yeah.
And, like the Subway sign. They killed it.
There's no
Absolutely killed it.
There's no way the kids recognized that song.
They
no,
did. They I mean, did. And some of their parents were up and singing the song. All I was right. one of them. And then later on in the night, they're known for a cover version of Bohemian Rhapsody. He's very into like, and he's very political and into like gay rights and stuff like that. And I guess when he was doing a song and coming through the crowd, they were doing Death of a Bachelor, and he's coming through the crowd, he had grabbed a rainbow flag that somebody had given him. So later on in the night, he goes, "This is from my favorite gay person or homosexual person or something like that," he had said, and he did Bohemian Rhapsody, another one that they absolutely nailed. The kid's got range. So I mean, am I going to say that that's like the future of rock and roll? I highly doubt it.
No, they've been around a long time though. They've been at least 10 years, right? Probably
13.
More.
He said 13.
Probably more. Yeah.
I really only started listening. I mean, I guess that's not what I'm searching for. And it took my 13-year-old daughter to introduce me to that because she's in love with the guy. You know, I mean, one of those good-looking singer type deals.
Yeah.
A little too emo for me, I guess, but it wasn't horrible.
You don't like the songs?
They're okay. I mean, I'm hearing them all the time because it's blasting at O'Reilly's room.
Yeah. All right.
But I left not being like, oh, my God, I just sat through the worst thing in my life. I didn't leave that way. I left saying, okay, it was a concert.
It could be a lot worse.
Yeah. She could have dragged me to freaking Justin Bieber.
Case in point. There you go. And then you know what? 9 out of 10 girls her age are dragging their dad to Justin Bieber. Yeah. So, be happy. That's funny, man. There was everybody was every girl was there at their parents, right?
Yeah.
Remember our dads taking us?
My dad never took me to a concert.
Really?
No.
Never forgot.
My mother did.
I felt bad for my dad. You know, if it was 1977, it would be a different story, but dad took us to see Kiss in 1985.
Ooh.
Yeah, they played 13 fucking songs and bounced. Two lame guitar solos, a lame drum solo, a 30-minute story about the chick that Paul Stanley was banging. Yeah, and we tore our seat cushions out, and my dad called us idiots.
There was, I don't know if you remember, but if you went to concerts, if you went to metal shows in the mid-80s, there was a trend.
Yeah.
There was a trend for a few years where you rip your fucking seat up and take it home with you.
Especially if you didn't like the show.
Didn't you like nail it to your wall or something?
No, I kept mine as a souvenir, man. I ripped my seat cushions out and I stuck them to my wall. I did.
Yeah,
that's how stupid I was.
My mother brought me, I think, a Hall & Oates.
Didn't you write Kiss Concert in marker?
Yeah, I labeled them.
Hey, it's memorabilia.
Which
man.
Is which?
People paid top dollar for Yankee Stadium seats.
Now, when somebody bought your Kiss collection, did they buy that seat from you?
Ooh, I doubt it.
Did one person buy your Kiss collection, or did you sell it over a period of time?
It was mostly one rich kid, man. My high school buddy Dean, who I would love to fucking see again, dude. I don't know what happened to him.
For anybody that doesn't know, Stick Nixon is an ex-Kiss collector from the early, early days of the very first Kiss conventions, right?
We went to the first Kiss convention, did we not? In Boston, the first one ever we were at. That we were fanatics. I was a fanatic.
Even Lydia wasn't even, she was like, well, I got on board at the Meadowlands.
Yeah.
What do you call it? Big guy. Sebastian from Skid Row.
Big
Kiss collector.
Sure.
Big time Kiss collector.
But I spent all the money that I made at my first job at Roy Rogers for like 2 years just buying Kiss shit, dude.
Wow.
Until I woke up. It was amazing. I woke up one day, dude, and I was looking at my Asylum poster, and for the first time in my life, they seemed fucking lame to me. And I was like, whoa.
That would be the record to
my
do
heroes,
it.
My heroes, dude. I was starting to experiment, listen to R.E.M. and trying to listen to Bob Dylan, trying to listen to the Beatles, and all of a sudden I was like, whoa, they don't look so fucking cool, dude. It was like a shock.
Isn't cool anymore.
And
was Tears Are Falling on Asylum?
Tears Are Falling was on Asylum, and I left Kiss behind for a lot of years, but everything comes back around. I'm back. I love Kiss.
The little coincidences and weird things that happen on our show, man. Like last week, I think I said, what was it that came up twice in conversation? I forgot what it was, but now I'm realizing, okay, Tears Are Falling. This is the second episode in a row
we've talked
where
about.
Tears Are Falling comes up in conversation.
Yeah,
yeah, man.
That was Gene, right?
I can't seem to get away from 80s Kiss.
Making the windshield wipers across the eyes like in the video. All I picture is Paul dancing around and like, he looked like he was in a ghillie suit from the Marines or something. It was all stringy shit on him.
And if you are a Kiss fanatic too, you know that was their most awful look. The clothes were the worst in 1985 that Asylum tour than any other year. I know I was spending so much time on this band.
They wore more makeup without makeup than when they wore makeup.
Yeah. They stopped being trendsetters and they were following the trend instead.
Totally.
You know what I mean? They were trendsetters.
Let that sink in.
Yeah, sure.
Let that sink in. They wore more makeup when they took the makeup off than when they wore makeup.
I 100% agree. It's crazy. More hairspray, whatever. But they started following trends instead of being the guys who were crashing through those walls. Ozzy did it too. Like the Ultimate Sin record and shit like that. He's walking around in a glitter
robe
with
safe.
Highlighted hair. I'm like, fucking Ozzy, what are you doing?
I was, dude. Nobody was safe in 1985. I was walking around with
I love that record.
Hairspray.
It's one of my favorite.
My
Ozzy
hair was higher than it was long.
So was mine.
I address this stuff in my... I'm gonna mention my book. I address a lot of this stuff in my book. I'm still writing my book. And hopefully by the end of the year, it'll be done.
Cool, man.
Yeah. I say, but I go on a whole little rampage
can't
about
stop
the mid-80s
writing.
And how everybody was like following those trends, man, and how, Big Bad Ozzy.
Big Bad Ozzy.
Looked like he crawled out off the set of the Golden Girls or something.
Yeah, he did, like Maud.
Yeah.
But Gene was Maud, man.
Gene, that's even better, yeah.
No, that's the consensus among Kiss fans,
you
man.
You
Gene,
think,
was, Gene looked
think
like
of
Maud.
Those guys and how they looked. The ugliest looking fucking 80s band was Crocus. The singer from Crocus.
Crocus was...
That guy looked like he ran into a fucking brick wall and then they slapped him up on stage. They were bad looking. Autograph was no fucking winner either, but fucking Crocus? Oh, my God.
Well, let me see, man.
All right, worst hair in rock, Eric Carmen or the guy from Crocus?
The guy from Crocus. That guy had a He had the worst fucking...
You know what? They wrote
That's our gun to the head question.
Yeah.
Crocus wrote one of the best heavy metal songs ever written. Screaming in the Night is one of the greatest. If they would have written 10 or 20 more songs as good as that, we'd be talking about Crocus. Like, yeah, you did?
Yeah.
They did a good version of Ballroom Blitz, too. I mean, they weren't horrible. I'm just saying they were the ugliest band in the 80s.
I don't like Ballroom Blitz. I don't like that song.
Oh, really?
Any band that's ever played it, it's just a song I don't like. I don't like it when the Damned did it.
Wow.
I want to get Dee Snider on here, man, to talk about Crocus. Now, there's a backstory to that. If you don't know it, look it up.
But I don't know it.
Yeah.
Oh,
man.
Did they have a fight?
He calls them Crappus.
Okay, because Dee Snider was not afraid to fucking throw down with anybody.
I love Dee Snider. But,
I love him, too. That dude is a fucking
animal. I tried to get him on here, man, but, you know, I still haven't had I haven't gotten a reply.
Did you talk to him personally, or was it his reps?
No, this was late. This was kind of when his podcast was still going on.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of stuff going on, like mutually, that I don't want to talk about on the air during a show.
I would love to talk to him.
I can't reach him.
I would ask him the question because Howard interviewed him, and I would want to know more about a show he played in London. And Howard was actually in the audience. They were I think like NBC then, and they were there promoting something, and Twisted Sister was playing, and they knew each other from Long Island. Blah blah blah. Long story short, I guess some. Some hellions were messing with Howard and them, and fucking D just like jumps off the stage and started beating the shit out of this fucking guy. To hear D tell the story and Howard, it was just fucking awesome.
I don't want
to
leave the impression that I know D Snider or anything. Like when I say mutual, man, there was stuff going on our podcast in the early days of our podcast, like the first couple of shows that there
6
was,
months
there
ago
was regarding,
the early
regarding
days.
Topics. No, we're going on a year next month.
Yeah.
We'll be a year in May.
The early days,
man. Hey, look, Kiss put out the originals fucking 2 years into their career, man. So,
it's true. It's all relative.
So,
didn't Counting Crows put out a live album as their third album or something like that?
I believe it was their third album, Live Across the Wire or something like that. But you know what? You know why they did that though? They're a good live band, and they're I think they're better suited to see live.
I always hated like when groups put out like a greatest hits. After like less than 5 years into their career, and like there's only like 3 hits on it, actual hits. And
greatest hits to you, maybe not to me.
Yeah, I'm not a big purveyor or fan of greatest hits albums. I know you have to have Neil Young Decade. That's one you have to have.
I think one of the Eagles, there was an Eagles one that was
10 years ago.
You'd probably have to have that.
10 years ago, there was a double CD that came out. I forgot what it was called. It was like a white cover.
I can't remember the name of it either.
I mean, there's the 2 greatest hits from the 70s that are supposedly sold like 6 billion copies or something.
The one with the steer skull on it and the one with the record album on it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Any other cover album, compilation album you need to have is the subject of tonight's show, The Great 28 by Chuck Berry, I think you need to have.
And the Beatles' Red and Blue.
Yeah.
Red album and the Blue album.
I don't have those.
I don't have that Beatles either. The one, what was it? The Ones or something like that?
Where the number
had
ones.
Yeah, Number Ones. That was a good one. They had that when they took Lennon's voice and they produced Free as a Bird.
Oh, the anthology.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was really good, man.
That was good.
It was spooky good,
It was.
It was spooky good. Yeah, that's funny you mentioned Chuck, man. And we had all just talked about him. And, I posted on our Facebook page that letter that was it Carl Sagan, I guess. When they sent that record into space,
right?
We had just talked about that on the rock and roll 300 years from now, and Chuck was really Chuck was it. The bottom line of that whole article was, would it be Chuck Berry? And we had talked recently that he had just turned 90, and I mean all this stuff. It was just really wild.
Now you saw Chuck Berry,
Echo Lake Park, man. Just fucking, it's one of those legends that you could say I got to see.
What year?
Jesus, Riley was a baby.
Is 2007 safe to say?
5, 6, 7. Was she 4? That might be a little late.
Late.
That'd be a little earlier than that. Because we had little earplugs for her and stuff.
Yeah.
And Live was there. The
That's
alarm
awesome.
Was there.
Mm.
Big outdoor park thing, almost like right across from the college in Union County over there, at Cranford.
Right. Yeah, yeah. There were pictures. I don't remember where it was.
Maybe it was. Let's see. She was
03,
the
other night.
4,
there were pictures from Union County. Some show that played here, like one of the last ones. Yeah.
2005, 2006. If you saw it as 2007, then that's definitely the date.
That's what it said. But sometimes they're off.
4, 5, 6. I would have put her at 4. Yeah, I guess possible. I thought she was more like 3, but 4 is definitely possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, people. We lost Chuck this week.
And go ahead. I didn't mean to jump on your
point. And who? No,
the drummer from Boston, Sid.
Oh, yeah. He died yesterday.
Yeah.
Did he?
On stage. In the middle of a set.
What? On a cruise ship.
On a cruise ship,
the second
guy
just here to die on a cruise ship, man.
Really?
Yeah, Jimmy Bain earlier this, like, well, last year.
They hit him with CPR. They fucking defibbed him and
everything.
That's
nuts.
Yeah.
That is truly nuts. Yeah.
Did anybody die today?
They come in threes, man. We got to have one more. And quick. But,
somebody quick, die.
The night Chuck went, I got sentimental, man. I busted out all my Chuck records. Was everybody on Facebook pretending that they were all in love with Chuck? That's what Nicole told me. There were so many people.
There was a lot of
talking
posts
about how much
a
Chuck
lot of older people,
him.
People our age and older,
people that,
I think.
No doubt don't have a single Chuck tune on their iPod.
I don't think it was that bad.
All kind of fakers
None
out
of
there.
The millennials like they did for Prince.
It made world news. I mean, it was on world news tonight. I mean, that's a big deal. That's a big deal.
I was wondering that because it seemed to me like the public impact wasn't the same for Chuck as it was for Prince and Bowie. And I thought it should have been. And I don't know. I don't look in the supermarket and see Chuck on every magazine like I did Prince and Bowie.
You know, 2016, as bad as it was for the second generation of rock stars, it was very kind to the first generation. And the first generation has been kind of sitting on, you know, the ones that are still around.
Dylan.
Are doing well. Yeah,
Berry.
I'm talking more
Keith
like Chuck
Richards.
Berry. No, that came out in the 50s. I'm talking about the 50s.
Oh, even before that.
First
generation
of like Chuck Berry, Little Richard is still around.
Right.
And Chuck was still holding on. Fats Domino, I think, is still around.
Did we ever determine if Bo Diddley's still alive?
Jerry Lee Lewis is still alive. Bo Diddley is gone.
Bo Diddley's gone.
Yeah.
It was nice to say that Chuck was alive. Yeah. God damn it. But
I kind of sensed
he touched
it, man.
A lot of people, man.
Yeah.
A few months back, we were talking about, like, we opened up one of those shows where we were talking about Chuck's new album. It was in the news that Chuck was making his first new album since 1972. And I just got a sense, a weird sense, that this is going to be his year, man. This is going to be, like, the year we lose Chuck.
Yeah.
I just had a
bad feeling about that. It's a safe bet. Once you turn 90.
You lived a hell of a life. And that guy lived a hell of a life, man.
He's got an autobiography that's been out forever, man. I would like to pick that up one of these days.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea.
Absolutely, man.
But C'est la vie. That's my song by him, man. I love that song, man.
Uh-huh. Is that in the Reservoir Dogs?
No, Pulp Fiction.
Oh, okay.
That song, man, just kills me every time I hear it. Love it. And his version of Run, Run, Rudolph, man. Every Christmas time, that's the one.
That's one of my favorite Christmas songs.
That's the go-to one, man.
It's one I can still listen to.
Spinning like a whizzing jet.
Yeah. But I went online that night anyway, man, the night he died, and I was looking at various things, and one thing said Chuck's last show, and it was like 2014 or something like that, and yikes, it was time for him to retire, dude. He just was slow, man. I felt sorry for the band, dude. That must have been like, yo, just a picture of Bob Dylan, except 10 times suckier.
Wow.
Like, really, really bad, man. Like,
and that's funny, because I know in an earlier show, what was the movie about his birthday? Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll.
Yeah,
Hail, Rock and Roll. Great movie. When he's, like, schooling Keith Richards, he's like, no, son, you got to play it on the up. And Keith is just kind of looking baffled at him.
I understood that as a guitarist, man, okay?
There's a rhythm there that he wasn't getting, and Chuck put him in his place, did he not?
Yeah. But you know what? I'm looking at that as a guitarist, and I'm, like, watching this, and I'm like, why doesn't Keith get that? Why doesn't Keith get what Chuck is trying to show him? I got it. Like you start out with the note bent up. Don't hit the note and then bend it. The note when it's played
is bent up already.
It's already bent.
I know part.
And Keith could not fucking grasp that.
Yeah.
No, son, you're doing it all wrong. Yeah. And he's like showing him, man. It's he schooled him. It was fucking great.
But
in my opinion, Keith is as great as he is throughout the history of rock and roll, he's more of like that sloppy blues player.
Absolutely.
He's not. And Chuck was polished, I think.
Yeah.
Chuck was more polished.
Polished for Chuck. I don't know. Live, he took a lot of risks. He was an adventurous musician. I'm like, oh, am I wrong? Hail, hail, rock and roll. Isn't like Chuck trying these crazy chord changes? Aren't there times in that film when you see Keith like, no, we go like and Keith's saying he wanted to do crazy shit that would never work, and you see him going, no, fuck that. Yeah, you're on stage, he's shaking his head, like, because Chuck is telling him to do something, and he was like,
I think he's more polished, and I'm glad you guys agreed with me about Keith though, that he's that, you know, that sloppy, but Jimmy Page style, you know, that sloppy just blues guy.
I don't want my rock and roll too clean or too precise. I like a little bit of slop.
It's
got to
be dirty and nasty. Yeah, absolutely. Flint.
Yeah.
Absolutely. When he woke up with a needle in his arm, he's like, that sounds good, mate. Let's put it to tape.
That's what the Flaming Lips say, man. They keep the slop in. They get that too.
Great review of that show, by the way.
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
Yeah,
I enjoyed that a lot.
Loved it, man. I wish I could go back to that night.
He's a wild dude, man.
He's out there, man.
They did one of the Who records, I think they did. He was like in a bubble and shit one time. He's out there. He's definitely out there.
Yeah, they do a lot of Who covers, a lot of Pink Floyd covers.
Floyd, they did the Floyd stuff too.
Yeah.
They did a Floyd song on like Fallon or something like that.
Is it safe to say that Chuck Berry is the undisputed king of rock and roll?
I'm going to agree with that article, and we did it.
We grew up. We grew up hearing that it was Elvis, but I disagree with that.
I hated Elvis. I still hate Elvis.
You know, Elvis.
Well, Elvis brought, I think, into the mainstream maybe a little bit more because he was white and privileged.
Race my play card.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was gonna say that, man.
There were places. You know, it was about Chuck Berry. You know, with his passing, I had read that. I can't remember the name of the place. You know, so I don't want to quote it, but he had said. One of the biggest highlights of his career was going back and playing a place and selling it out that he wasn't even allowed to fucking play in.
Right.
That's got to be a fucking thrill, man. Mm-hmm. That's a thrill.
That's the truth for all those guys. That's the truth for friggin' Muddy Waters and Howlin' Wolf. Once, like, the Stones.
Buddy Guy.
Yeah, man. Because they were struggling on the Chitlin' circuit. Now that rock and roll emerged and bands like the Stones and the Beatles, everybody are aware of people like them. Sonny Boy Williamson, now they got fancy clothes, they're going on tour to sleep with white girls. Their life improved, man, when people became aware.
Drugs got better.
Yeah, the drugs got better.
Yeah, you could even take that up a notch, too, to the Motown sound, because Motown, as popular as it was, there were still places they weren't allowed to play. And then you had bands like the Rolling Stones covering their songs, and those British bands were covering that because they were so soulful. They were like, oh, that's some really good stuff. And then that started opening up that whole world too. You know, I mean, not that the Motown thing wasn't popular because they had great songwriters in their stable.
Yeah,
but there were still places they couldn't get into.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just the black eye of this nation, unfortunately. You know, but that's my opinion. We'll save that for another day as a rock and roll podcast.
Mm-hmm.
that was a great lead-in. Was Chuck Berry into what I'll say the wimpification. I'll behave. The wimpification of the rock
guitar. He's the archetype for the rock and roll guitarist. And everything followed him, man. You know, I mean, Keith obviously got into that once Brian Jones was gone, and Keith kind of took over as the Stones guitarist, man. You know, I mean, obviously Mick Taylor was there, but, I mean, look, it was Keith. The Glimmer Twins, man. Mick and Keith. It became that. And his riffs were derived...
No more so than in It's Only Rock and Roll, the song, man.
And everybody else, for that matter. I mean, even the Sex Pistols were playing Chuck Berry riffs, you know, even though they were railing against rock and roll, and they killed rock and roll.
And the establishment.
The establishment.
Fuck Pink Floyd.
But they were playing Chuck Berry riffs.
They're wankers.
Yeah. I just listened to Nevermind the Bollocks before you got here. I had to crank it. But,
all of Chuck's children are still out there playing his riffs, man. Says Bob Seger.
I told you. Also trolling the internet. I found this thing, the London Rock and Roll Show, 1972. I was looking for the Rolling Stones. I thought the Stones headlined it, but they didn't. It was like all the old school American rockers in 1972. London, Bill Haley and the Comets, Bo Diddley, Jerry Lee Lewis. Then as the sun went down, Little Richard looking flamboyant. And Chuck headlining. And the beautiful thing was, like, all the footage of the crowd, man. Like, hippies, but freaks, man. Mod people, biker people. Guys doing crazy dances with these boots of Jelly Roll hair. Releasing doves. Dancing girls on the stage, man. In between the acts, like, naked. Everything you're not getting at the Ed Sheeran concert.
Everything you're not getting in the United States up until after Jim Morrison was arrested for doing something. I mean, the United States was just so much more fucking uptight. We still are, man.
Yeah,
we're so uptight that, I mean, was I wrong in making that statement? I mean, no. Morrison fucking allegedly shows his penis and the fucking world is going to blow up, for Christ's sakes. Where you're telling me about a show in 72 that,
look,
you know, England
reacted
is fucking
to Janet,
swinging from the
Janet
chandelier.
Jackson.
Yeah, I was just going
to
say
at
that.
The Super Bowl.
We still have that.
Yeah.
That.
Oh, my God, my poor kid's eyes are
fucking the children.
Bleeding.
The children,
blood,
man.
The children. When the fuck did the children take over
we've
the
got
world?
That, we've got that Puritan lineage, man.
Fuck
that,
you.
Know, like, we're,
go to your room with no fucking
everything
dinner.
Everything is all sex and violence on TV, but the second something happened spontaneously, man, everybody crawled out of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, man.
That fucking asshole mother complaining about Janet Jackson's tit has got fucking five different boyfriends hanging the line, ignoring her fucking kid playing a fucking computer game that has more violence than she could even fucking imagine, because I play the same games. That's a fucking... get fucking bent. rant over.
But with Chuck, you know, with Chuck, the guitar became, getting into our topic, it just became, you know, think about Jimmy, man, burning his guitar, the whole sacramental thing on stage at Monterey, man. Guitars became... It was like a fucking machine gun. It was like an extension of your cock.
I always think of it as an Excalibur sword, but a machine gun is good too. I always thought of it as like a fucking sword, and you're just like, yeah, Conan with the sword of, what was that, the sword of Crom or whatever.
Yeah,
that
it was sexy.
And all of just the iconic visuals of rock and roll and various different poses with the guitar. Jimmy Page holding up his Les Paul, you know, Ace with the smoking Les Paul. Scratch the surface.
Even Clapton
the
dripping
imagery
with sweat
of
on
the
that
guitar.
Strat.
Yep. Speaking of that.
What happened?
Eddie Van Halen with the red and white. Exactly. Fucking, you're right, man. Every great rock photograph either captured a wicked guitar and its player or a singer.
I'm going to go out.
Sorry, all you bassists and drummers out there, but.
Here's what I'm going to suggest. Prior to the guitar, or at the same time as the guitar, because Chuck, you know, the founding fathers. There was a time when you had like Little Richard and Jerry Lee Lewis banging away on the piano, just as badass. The piano was like a central instrument in rock and roll. And then at some point in the late 60s into the 70s, you had, you know, Liberace was still cool. You know, he was like the big, you know, he was the big showman, you know.
Liberace's totally
Liberace,
cool.
Liberace, man.
Hey.
Don't be hating on Liberace.
And then, you know, you had Barry Manilow. You had this, the beginning of the singer-songiter thing. So aside from the folky guitarist, you had the whole Carole King thing and Burt Bacharach.
Yeah.
You know? And the most rocking thing you got from the piano in the 70s was Billy Joel and Elton John.
Yeah, no.
Okay.
John.
And Billy Joel once said, trying to put his finger on why the critics never really took him seriously as like hip and cool and, you know, being spoken of in the same sentence as like, say, Lou Reed or
Bowie or Bruce or Bowen,
even Mark Bolan, you know. He said, well, maybe if I had a guitar instead of a piano, you know. The piano became uncool in the 70s in rock and roll.
It like you said, the singer-songwriter, it was associated with the singer-songwriter thing.
Yeah.
Because the guitar kind of took
over. I think there's something to that.
I think the guitar in the 21st century has become to the 21st century what the piano became to the 70s.
They did that to themselves, though. I mean, you could go back and look. I think there was a show with the Troubadour. It was Elton John, like his first Coming to America thing. It was just him and his piano. Nobody else. And it was, you know, record executives and a few other people out there. And, you know, I don't know if that was the start of it, but it was a smaller place, a one-on-one performance almost. So it wasn't as in your face as it was. It was scaled back.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an interesting point, dude.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know for what reason, man, but guitar lost its primacy right around the change of the millennium, you know? Things started and things have never come back. I don't know why.
I have a theory of where it happened.
Lilith Fair?
No. No.
Because that's
no.
My theory.
My theory was Thriller.
That far back?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes, because not that metal wasn't still cool and guitar gods and stuff like that, but rock and roll guitar, they found a loophole in pop music that, whoa, we can get a really good guitar player or a guitar solo, even a studio guy who's good, and get it into our pop record and get it out there and sell even more records.
A la Beat It.
Yeah. Eddie Van Halen. I mean,
I think that was more like Michael Jackson hopping on the trends of fast guitar. I don't know. I think he was just taking advantage of the trends.
But he always did. Michael did always do that. I don't disagree. Mm-hmm. But I think after that, you started hearing some guitarists and famous guitarists on pop music. In pop music, playing on pop records. You know, I mean, a guy like Eddie Van Halen would never consider playing on a guy of his stature playing on like a TLC record. Yet, in the early 90s, late 80s, whatever TLC was popular, there were guys playing little guitar leads in those fucking songs. And I think that was my theory. Yours was Lilith Fair, but mine was...
I'm not blaming Lilith Fair, but I think after, you know, again, let's use Kurt as a dividing line. It's all it is, just a dividing line, just a historical marker.
Right.
Okay, because we have nothing else more significant to mark that period of time.
Like it or not.
You know, so when you have rock music or whatever became the representatives of rock music during the late 90s, Matchbox 20, Three Doors Down, Three Blind Mice.
All the number bands.
All the number bands, you know. On top of the rap and rock stuff, like the Kid Rock stuff and the Limp Bizkit stuff, you had this big wave of women with acoustic guitars. And I remember you at some point in the late 90s, you were like, oh, Jesus Christ, another chick with an acoustic guitar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
thank you, Melissa Etheridge.
In retrospect, we should have went to Lilith Fair, man.
No, this is not. We're not bashing the Lilith Fair girls. We're not even bashing Lilith Fair. But there was something where the acoustic guitar kind of informed and led the artist.
Finding my inner self.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going there.
Can't touch my inner child.
Yeah. No, but it became this. It kind of informed and led the artists, the way artists would translate and present their music for the next, up until recently. A lot of acoustic guitars now. The guitar has basically become this secondary instrument to accompany wimpy songs, I think.
Yeah.
That's where you get
taking a background supporting role.
What's the instrument now?
I don't think we focus on any one instrument. Now, this is taken out. This is excluding, like, the people that take guitar seriously, like, you know, like the ones who still listen to Aldi Meola and that Joe Bona, whatever his name is.
Bonamassa.
These guys,
Zach
mean,
Wild.
If you play, like, guitar for guitar's sake, you're that stuff.
They're out there.
Is what it is.
Guitar is still,
that's still,
it's
huge.
Still a staple, sure.
That's still huge.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And everybody in this room has gone to see
a
show.
I'm talking strictly mainstream. Pop music, yeah, mainstream music, where, again, rock and roll once inhabited. Okay, it marked its territory.
That
man.
Thing right over to your right over there, that's what took the guitar's place. A computer.
Maybe, man.
A computer.
That, yeah, you know what? That's the instrument.
Everything
of evil
can
over
be
there.
Fucking loaded into that thing.
That HP. That's the problem.
I'm gonna say something.
That's the instrument that took over for the guitar.
All right.
Dear Hewlett Packard.
All right, I was talking
to Nixon thinks.
I was talking to Tracy the other day, and we were talking about 90210. Remember that show?
Yeah.
All right. I was
How
a closet.
How do I talk to an angel?
I was a closet 90210 fan.
So was I.
901, whatever.
I watched 210, it with her.
210 or 120?
90210.
Okay. I was a closet fan in the 90s. All right.
Melrose
I had a girlfriend
Place,
who I never saw on a Wednesday, man. I always made sure that we didn't get together on a Wednesday. And if we did, my VHS was taping 90210. All right. Do you remember at the very, like, the last couple seasons, there was a guy named Ray. There was
the
a character
player.
Named Ray, the guitarist.
He went on to sing that song, How Do You Talk to an Angel?
All right. Who played? Do you remember who played him? I don't know.
I don't remember who played him, but he was a musician. He really was a musician.
Was
That's
there?
The
but remember the character, man? He was just like this guy. Like,
jerk off.
You know, you would never know, like, him from, like, a guy in a gym or a guy that works at the Apple store or, like, you know, there was nothing rock about him. There was nothing musician. He had the perfect
grungy
haircut.
And he had
a flannel shirt, you know.
He threw Tori Spelling down the stairs or something like that, right?
But there was just like, they had that one episode where we have to have some bad in this guy. We have to, ooh, look at him. He's going through his, like, horrible phase, and then he's going to end up on VH1, whatever happened to. And later, things turned to shit for Ray. And you made a point about Ed Sheeran sounding like he came off The Voice or the American Idol or something.
Yeah.
Like, there is nothing sounds rock like and roll about
that.
Any of these people. Justin Bieber. He picked up a guitar on one of those award shows. What does it mean?
Nothing.
Is it just to look cool, or is it
He's
just like the equivalent of, like, millennial girls wearing Metallica shirts on stage now, but they've never heard
Slayer,
a song? It's like a fashion statement.
One of the Kardashians in a Slayer shirt.
It is like a fashion
so
statement.
So if you have a guitar in your hand now, it's just like this, like, secondary fashion imagine? Statement to go along with whatever clothes you're wearing.
Justin's actually a drummer. He played on Fallon. It was interesting. I didn't think that kid had a freaking Yoda talent. You know, I'll say this. I gotta jump on your Ed Sheeran thing there, because as much as, like, the acoustic puff pieces that he does, there's a song that he did. It was in one of the Sons of Anarchy seasons called "Make It Rain." Completely turned my I was like, what?
Who's Ed Sheeran?
Ed Sheeran. Ah. You would never fucking think it was him, and it's amazing.
All right.
The fucking song is great.
I'm not saying these people aren't talented, man. There is talent out there. This is not even a question about talent. It's just a question of
talent. I'm just saying that.
I believe you, bro.
I'm not even a big fan of his, but, like, he has that one song that you're like, whoa. And then you got to try and listen to his other stuff, and I'm like, I can deal without that.
That's me with Bruno Mars, like we were saying before.
Yeah,
lock that ahead.
There's a lot of talent out there, man. You know, like, I got Connor Bright Eyes, the guy that calls himself Bright Eyes. You know, a lot of acoustic in there, a lot of, like, you know, sensitive male stuff going on there. Ben Gibbard from Death Cab for Cutie. You know, he made one of the greatest albums of the 2000s, mm-hmm. transatlanticism.
We are a sensitive fucking society.
But he's got that whiny, sing-songy thing where the guitar
is fucking butthurt. Your Coca-Cola smells too much like caffeine to me. Can you move it across the room, please? My butt hurts. Your Red Bull offends me because it's in a red can.
You know what?
Because it reckons my butt hurts.
You're right, man.
It's a fucking joke.
I'm as liberal as they come, but political correctness is part of the problem, too.
I'm as liberal as they too.
All right, so not only is there no guitar, but there's no old school lyrics like Kiss, like reach in my pocket and grab onto my rocket. You know, there's no misogynistic lyrics anymore because it's no longer PC.
You're afraid of fucking hurting somebody's feelings. They're gonna fuck that. What happened to the, you know, where's the PMRC? They're vanished because they don't have to be worried anymore because everything is fucking safe.
Tipper one, man.
Safe and smiley.
Yeah, safe and smiley is right, man.
Yeah, Tipper won.
And again, I hate to keep picking on Dave Grohl.
I love Dave Grohl. Pussification of the guitar instead of fucking.
But what's dangerous about Dave Grohl? Or it's just, you know, he smiles a lot and he says fuck a lot. And saying fuck a lot does not make you.
That dude looks
badass,
like. Every time
man.
I see a picture of that dude, it always looks like he's having a good time. I want to hang with Dave Grohl.
He's a great guy.
Happy as a pig and slop, that guy.
Love to hang with the guy. Plain White Tees, Hey There Delilah. Remember that song?
Yeah.
You know, another acoustic
everywhere.
Favorite.
Hey there, Delilah, I'm so sad I met your parents.
The Plain White Tees? They're on iCarly.
It almost kind of sounded like a Paul Simon.
Why do I know that?
Why do you know that?
Did I say that out loud?
I'm going to move over a little bit.
Mixing auto-tune with the guitar. With an acoustic guitar. It's just, what is the place of the guitar in rock? I mean, like much less, what is the place of rock in the 21st century? What is the place of the guitar in what is supposed to be rock music?
Fish. Trey from Fish.
I mean, and look,
it's not
even,
new.
Even like, okay,
but like you said, the guitar guys
there
are still
guitar
the guitar
guys out there.
They're
right?
still the guitar guys.
I would say like John Mayer.
Who's leading the, he could be
he's
like
a
the
great guitarist. His music doesn't interest me. His music, you know, his music
John Mayer
just
Trio
kinda,
I like a lot.
But he's a great guitarist.
He's a fantastic guitar player. what's the next gen? You know, those guys are still there. They're still doing it. They're still playing. But where's that next? I agree. Where's that next generation?
There are people out there listening to this. If there are people listening to this and there are guitarists out there that are listening to this that are saying, well, what about this guy? And what about this guy? What's wrong with these people? No, we're not. We're talking about strictly mainstream music. Pop music, pop rock, what passes itself off as rock within the context of pop music in the 21st century. I'm not talking about the guys like Joe. What was that guy, Joe?
Joe Bonamassa.
Yeah. I'm not talking about guys like him because he's great. But he exists in a world
Zach
of
Wild.
Guitar.
I'm talking about guys on the charts.
Yeah. And I'm not talking about people that exist solely
We're back
in their
to being
guitar
fucking dirtbags again, gentlemen. That's
right.
What we're back to.
That's what
right.
I was just thinking. As a positive side to it.
Yeah.
You know?
We could be back to being sheltered and fucking looked upon as scum. I'm cool with that.
And it's cool again.
Fuck off.
That makes it cool again.
Take your political correct ass across the fucking street. Stay out of my deli.
Long you want to conjure cool up again. Satan, man. Let's have a seance.
Didn't I say that? Didn't I say that once? That we need a good Satanist?
Cool again.
We need a good fucking Satanist to come up with some backwards messaging, or I said something about a drug addict too, I think. But we need some good backwards messaging put back
in the drugs
music.
Back to music.
I'm going to fuck you up. What the fuck did he just say?
That's the problem.
We need more of that.
Not
what
enough
did he say?
These
we
artists
need
doing
more of
drugs.
What the fuck did he just say? Spin that record backwards. Put Rob Halford on trial again. Bring that back.
Ozzy for fucking Suicide Solution and D. Snyder in front of the PMRC with fucking Frank Zappa.
Somebody blow their face. All the guns, man. Somebody take one and blow their face off for Christ's sake and blame Judas Priest again. We need this. We need the publicity in rock and roll, folks.
Yeah, but we need
Judas Priest. I mean, look,
I need,
for Christ's
I think,
sake, they're playing half. They're playing fucking amphitheaters. Man.
I think they should do it to like a Mastodon record, though, so we can get them out into the forefront instead of Judas Priest.
Brett
Judas Priest's
Hines,
days
man.
Are over.
Brett Hines, is it Hines or Hines, the guy from Mastodon?
Yeah. Who did I just read?
I love his
with
solo.
The Scorpions. Megadeth.
I love his solo project, by the way. It's called West End Motel. It's a guy from Mastodon, man, and he sounds nothing like Mastodon. Mastodon is a little bit too abrasive for my ass, man. Like sandpaper. It's like wiping
hippie.
Your ass with sandpaper.
You old hippie.
I got into Megadeth fairly recently, man. I love Megadeth now.
I like Megadeth.
I love them.
They're touring with the Scorpions this year, I think.
Yeah.
At least I read. I saw a little blurb. I didn't read the whole thing, so maybe I'm speaking out of line. Maybe
that's my plug for as far as good new music. It's not new. It's about 5 years old now. It came out around 2012, 2013. It's called West End Motel.
Yeah, you burnt that for me. It's a good disc.
It's the guy from it was Brent
did you
Hines
burn
or Hinn.
You burned it for me too.
It's called the guy from Mastodon.
Yeah, I think you did burn that for me.
Yeah, he's got a whole double musical life he's living.
No, I listen to new music. There's new music. No, I'm of course.
It's just not as
my
easy
finger's
to
not
find.
Totally on the pulse of everything that's going on, but there is stuff that
be impossible.
I would say locally, if you wanted to listen to a radio station locally to find new music, it would be DHA because Q104 around here is not playing anything new. However, DHA plays every fucking song they play sounds the same.
They
all sound alike.
I have not listened to FM radio
WFMU
for music in
good shit.
A good 20 years. I don't remember the last time I what's that last one? 104.3.
That's still around.
Are they still
K-Rock,
the station?
Yeah.
That's K Rock.
I mean,
no,
Q104.
That's the
K Rock. Q104.
Yeah,
Maria Melito on the Q.
Carol I mean, Miller. When I
Carol
stopped
Miller.
Listening
Seminole.
To FM radio,
she is seminal.
Not anymore.
No, not anymore. Music. Back in the day, she was hot. I won tickets to a movie premiere, and she was there.
Yeah.
She got out of the limo. I was like, whoa!
All the boys had a boner for Carol Miller in the early '80s. Well, speaking of guitar gods, that was no lie. I don't know what led me to this. I'm always trolling YouTube. And just trolling, and I wound up watching an Yngwie concert.
Mm,
you know, 89, man.
Whoa.
He was wearing the red...
militants.
The red band.
When he was in Russia.
Yeah, the marching band jacket. Yeah. Like,
Joel
like,
Turner
like,
with the singer.
Like Hendrix and Adam Ant wore that jacket. Yeah, I forgot Joel Turner sang for Yngwie, man.
We saw the
He's
very first
too.
Night of the Odyssey tour.
That must have been the Odyssey tour.
We went to L'Amour.
They opened up with what song?
He's going to be at
Rising Force. I feel the Rising Force. Right.
He's going to be at Starland, I think, isn't he?
Yeah, in May. I haven't seen Yngwie play in like 30 years.
Well, you know what? He impressed,
see him,
so he impressed the fuck out of me.
I'd like to see him play Black Star.
What was
I saw the first Rising Force tour, man.
No, you did. You were there very, very early.
Capitol Theater.
Very early, bro.
Wow. That was Metallic, right?
That was Metallic.
Metallic
open. Yeah.
Metallic, with the exception of Judas Priest in 84, Metallic was probably... No, Talis was the loudest concert I've ever been to.
Really?
That hurt my freaking ears. My heart was like, you know, my chest was fucking pounding, man.
Yeah.
It was painful. It was a painful show to listen to.
I know
Not
because
they sucked.
Right.
You know, Billy Sheehan was up there fucking wailing.
Yeah.
And then he got on stage with Yngwie at the end, and they played Manic Depression.
No shit.
Yeah.
I'd love to see him do batter do do boom. That had such a great bass line in it. I'd love to see him play that.
Yeah.
Now, Yngwie, the polar opposite of these guys we talked about before with the little slap on the edge, the little crunch. The guy's clean.
That
and
guy's
precise.
Crystal clean.
Somewhere along the line in certain circles, that became uncool. But no, there's nothing wrong with being proggy either,
there was a period
man.
Where
there's
like,
room
when
for
when
everybody
when
in this umbrella.
Yeah.
The
whole neoclassical thing in the mid-80s, around 84, 84, well, 80, 86, it was kicking, man. Every other month you had somebody, well, this guy's better than Yngwie. His name is Tony McAlpine. And then Tony McAlpine
sweeping
was big for
like
ladies
and gentlemen, sweeping
fuck Tony McAlpine. It's now Vinnie Moore. Vinnie Moore is better than both of them. You know, and then after Vinnie Moore, it was somebody else.
The sweeping arpeggios.
And like I said, it takes a real man to decipher between Vinnie Moore and Tony McAlpine.
Yeah.
Listen to Time Odyssey, the second Vinnie Moore album, and the second Tony McAlpine album called Maximum Security. I defy you. Unless you really know that music, I defy you to tell me the difference between
those guys. Those guys don't sound like Yngwie, though.
They don't sound like Yngwie, no.
No.
No. They were... Yngwie, you hear the pick. You actually hear the
right.
pick on the string of every note.
He was
Those
making
guys
it,
are more like the notes flow. Their fingers flow into the, you know what I mean?
Okay.
The notes flow into each other.
I
want to
hear the pick.
Vinnie
I think
Moore.
I like
the
Yngwie way better.
Yngwie, you hear that fucking pick against the string.
It was amazing to watch.
You know?
He didn't go to Juilliard or anything stupid like that, did he?
No, he went to his bedroom for like 15 hours a day.
Yeah.
He was still in Stockholm.
He wasn't a trained guy.
Nah, he learned by himself.
Well, Mike said it's true, man. He was there from the very beginning, first album, Passaic. I made fun of him for a hot minute, but then something happened, man. I borrowed the record, and I loved him after that. Dude.
That record is amazing.
Yeah, I'll reveal something real stupid.
I wore that cassette out.
I like Ding Ve so much. I actually tried to carve Ding Ve into my arm.
Oh,
right here. Yeah,
plus Ding Ve's got that. You know,
I had the YNG and I couldn't go any further. It was too.
I don't remember that. So walked,
like, thank God I don't have a fucking YNG scar right there. Like now to this day, man.
Who's Ying? Ying Yang. What's the difference? Yeah, I wore that cassette out in my Walkman, man. I used to walk like in the mornings when the sun was coming up, and just that whole album, just listening to it, and I'd be like coming down off of some kind of mind-altering fucking substance.
And Yngwie had that unmistakable sound, man. You know, where I don't know, everybody was trying to flip to the rhythm pickup, get the 2-millimeter pick.
I think Steve Vai would have been the closest.
Scallop your neck.
Yeah. Oh, the scallop
Steve
neck.
Vai,
yes.
Is another
scallop
planet.
The neck.
Steve Vai is
that
just
a whole another world, man. For the love of God, on that fucking solo record of his, holy Christ!
Flexible was the
Flexible.
I think the big album at the time for Steve Vai.
Yeah.
Was that now? Flexible came out.
I'm trying to think of the one when he was in.
He was Frank Zappa's boy, man.
One later that was. Yeah.
He was transcribing music for Zappa from school on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And Frank flew him out there because Frank couldn't read or write music. He's like, transcribe this. And
really?
He started out as a transcriber. It was a great interview in like Guitar Magazine years ago about that. And Steve Vai was just so open about it. And to hear that whole story and then how he got in the band, this was just really good shit to read, man.
Huh.
So, well, what else were we listening to back then? I mean, some of my favorite guitarists were like the ones that weren't the wankers, man. The ones that just like the guitar masturbation, just constant. Like, because then it became this thing where, you know, and Yngwie is guilty.
Yeah,
everybody, you know, as far as like doing the same thing over and over
Vincent,
and over again.
Mark St. John. Well,
that's where I stopped listening to him. He just became annoying. Where it was just like, let the singer sing.
Yeah,
he's like wailing through the verses. Yeah. You know, when he did that cover album, you know, and he did like covers from like he did like ABBA covers and Carry On My Wayward Son.
When you talking
wailing
now.
Through the verses?
Is this like
it's
in the
like,
90s
stop.
Now?
Recently, I guess in the last 10 years.
Okay.
But
so
even like
Yngwie's
when
still around?
You know, he got into, I mean, one of my favorite Yngwie albums, believe it or not, was like after, it was called Eclipse. It was like his fifth album, came out like 1990.
I
and I was already like not into metal at the time. But I still, okay, let me get this album. And I loved it. But after that, it just became like you couldn't tell one solo from the next. Well, if you listen to his first two or three albums, you know that this is the solo to Island in the Sun. You know this is the solo to Jet. They were distinctive, man.
That maybe it was the time period, though. Cause
far
was,
beyond the sun.
All those, you know, everybody was fighting against the powerhouse that would be grunge a year down the road. You know what I mean?
But then he started getting into that Seventh Sign and Fire and like all that stuff. Fire and
Ice. Sounds like he lost his touch. Started ripping himself off.
Exactly.
Becoming a parody.
Exactly, and that was my problem with Eddie. You know, after so much, you know, he made that first album, the first couple albums, and then he just you heard of one trick ponies. He was like a three trick pony.
Yeah,
you know,
Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah,
I'll give him up to 84. I'll give him his whole.
Up to 84.
David Lee Roth, the whole David Lee Roth era. I give him
right.
And
the original David Lee Roth era.
One or two things with Sammy that are just brilliant, but the guy just, I don't know, he fell in love. You know.
Yeah.
The thing you read in the opening with Clapton. That's, you know.
What I like about Van Halen is as a band, as they're like, I like their songs. You know, I don't really listen to Van Halen to listen to Eddie Van Halen's guitar playing. You know, that's just kind of the way, you know.
I listen to it for both.
Yeah. But that first one, man, is I had an argument with somebody recently about the first Van Halen album. You know, and just like, what's great about that? I'm like, dude, it's
really.
I don't even care if I don't like Van Halen that much.
Me
I'm not
too.
A fan. But
I'm not even a fan. But that album's awesome. You can't deny that album.
First album is a masterpiece.
It fucking is.
You get no argument from me. I love that band. I love me some Van Halen.
So
David Lee Roth was my singer, man. In our super groups, Dave was my man.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But today we don't have Eddie Van Halen. Eddie Van Halen's been
gone.
Very inactive. His musical output has been two or three albums in the last 25 years.
He has some health issues too, but
I couldn't believe it when I saw him. I looked him up.
Yuppie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was mustache, short hair. Like, who is that guy?
Okay, but Eddie Van Halen, see, he was badass in his youth. Now you got the youth of today that have these guitars on. What are they doing besides whining?
whining
and being pretty boys and looking like they just like walked out of Abercrombie and Fitch.
They're all fucking butthurt. I said it before. Everybody's butthurt. That's it. My life
you
sucks.
Can't distinguish
you
one from the other though. They have no names. They have
joke.
look at Jimmy Shit Page's joke. Pants on the 77 fucking goddamn
snakes coming up the
tour
side, whatever
it day on the green in Oakland. He had the black ones with the dragon pants and
dragons,
then the white ones. He looked badass, man. You knew
pants.
That was Jimmy Page standing there. You could see him from 2 miles away and still know it's Jimmy Page,
Jimi
man.
Hendrix's fucking
can you distinguish
fucking mescaline fucking
can we really
in
distinguish
dipped in mescaline.
Justin Bieber from Ray on 90210?
You get fucking Kanye West. Man. Kanye West fucking is more concerned with selling fucking sneakers and shoes than he is to putting out fucking good music and likes to compare himself to the greatest people in music history. That guy should just fucking fall off Earth. Somebody tell him that the world is flat and let him fall off the edge of it. Let him just go in search of it, and he can just keep going and going.
You know what?
And go, like Forrest Gump.
I have to withhold judgment because I've never sat down and listened to Kanye West ever, man.
He's the biggest pompous piece of shit in the music industry.
Well, that may be, but what about his music? Does it suck? Okay.
Yes. It sucks.
I don't really know. I can't answer it. I've never listened to it.
And I'm sorry if anybody out there disagrees with me. I know there's a couple of loyal listeners that will disagree with me, but it's horrible.
Kanye West, you suck. We're going to allow a minute for the bomb sound effect. Hold on.
Now back to our regularly scheduled programming.
My stomach just went. No, I refuse to even acknowledge.
They put a thing on my locker at work. It says, "I love Pat." It's a big picture of Kanye West. All right,
We didn't answer our question. How did this happen? But
there is no answer.
I think it was Eddie Van Halen on the Michael Jackson Thriller record that started the decline.
I don't know if I agree with that, but okay.
You say Lilith Fair. We agree to disagree, my friend.
It started at Lilith Fair.
You started at Lilith Fair. I go way back. I go further back.
The only reason I disagree is because you have to go through the entire 80s and 90s after Beat It. There were great guitarists going on. Guitar was still very much a part of rock and roll. It was still the central instrument.
Yeah,
it's too bad that the theory doesn't answer for the 90s.
That guitar... That
smells like Teen Spirit. I mean,
guitar
the riff.
Guitar was so much more accessible in pop music after that Thriller record that I think that was the chink in the armor. I'm not saying that there was not good guitar players, not good music, anything. There was two other movements after the Thriller record, for Christ's sakes. The grunge movement and the fucking hair band movement. There were still two great things there, two great decades of music, but that was the chink in the armor where people said, it's safe for us to get a modern hard rock guitar player and put him on a pop record.
Now, I mean, because we're in the middle of the show, I'm so tempted to just like sit back and do my thinking and just like go through the 70s and think like what pop songs had like very definitive guitar solos. You know, like You're No Good from Linda Ronstadt, 1974. That is a one of the greatest guitar solos ever played, man.
Music was completely different then, though. It was a completely different animal then. Mm. That was
pop music a la 1974.
So were the Eagles.
You know?
They were a band, though. They were a band, and they played,
they were on pop charts, and Linda.
Yeah, but they were a rock band.
Who played the lead on that? It was probably one of the Eagles guys who played the lead on that fucking record, for Christ's sake. Could have been Felder.
What's that?
That You're No Good. Was it Felder?
No, it was. Why can't I think of it? He's like nobody knows his name. Had a hit on his own like 2 years later.
Okay,
you would know him as a studio guy.
He's more of a studio guy than like you know him on his own. But he, I can't remember.
I just think the pop charts were a little different then too. The 80s kind of shook that all up. So you had a lot of one-hit wonders.
You had a lot of lead guitar and disco, man. Listen to Hot Stuff, Donna Summer. You know, this was these trends were...
I still say not like Beat It.
It's an obvious point.
Hot Stuff was a huge song in 1979.
Yeah.
There's a hot guitar solo in there.
Is there? I'm not
Hot Stuff. Hot guitar.
I'm hearing a song. I'm not hearing a solo now.
Hot.
Pepsi Challenge.
Hot.
Let's put that to the listeners.
No, if you're going to say compare one to the other, you know Beat It.
I'm
going
to put it to the listeners, man.
You know,
I mean, of course it's going to take it. I mean, I see your point, and you're just making the argument.
I'm
and
just
it's a
saying
great,
that it was...
It's a great counterpoint, but I'm going to stand my ground. If you name one that I really honestly agree with, I'd be more than happy
you know
to say,
what?
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. Electric guitar. But I mean, the wimpification of the guitar is the guitar artists, the people who use guitars in pop music, it's largely acoustic guitars
for the most part. And that I could say Dave Matthews Band/Lilith Fair
yeah.
wimpified it. Point taken. See, I can be agreeable. I'm not always a dickbag.
I mean, I know like Ryan Adams, who's like a talented writer, you know, he's like one of the, he'll strap on an electric guitar.
And he'll also put on a strap on.
Strap all kind of things on.
And you'll see him with an acoustic guitar too.
I'm just in one of those fucking moods tonight, guys.
Yes, he will.
He'll just strap one on.
It's all fucking pussification. Sorry, kids. It's been pussified.
Yeah, so I'll say Dave Matthews Band and Lilith Fair. It's all right around that same
Matthews.
Era.
Dave Matthews.
Oh, come on with that.
I can't stand Dave Matthews'
music.
We all
agree on that.
But that is a talented band.
They're talented
bands. That is a talented band.
They're very talented. This is not my cup of tea.
Not mine. No. That's interesting that none of us like Dave Matthews.
You know, it's music for white college kids with guys who wear baggy shorts and play Frisbees.
And drink too much beer.
Throw Frisbees around.
I can't hold my beer. I'm drinking Miller Lite and I'm fucking drunk, dude.
That was half the Dead fans in the 90s, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rock Under Fire. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating and a review if you like the show. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. We're on Stitcher. Subscribe to our YouTube page.
Visit us at Facebook.
Visit
Leave
us at home. Visit us at home. Join us for tea.
Say hello. How you doing?
That's episode 19.
See you guys soon.
Follow our shit. Pouring on me, bad news keep pouring on me.